What is a prime particle? And what does the box look like in which it travels? Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a program which focuses on the visual arts. Co-host Stephen DeLuque and I produce it here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Today, we visit with Timo Beckwith and Billy Clayton. They are two of the seven artists who are the core of a new interdisciplinary experimental event collaborative, the title of which is Prime Particle Productions. It is the desire of this multifaceted group to present free, artistic, live productions as a means of displaying the vast reaches of what it means to be creative. They readily admit that the work done in preparation for this first event has changed their lives and their thinking about creativity. Their hope is that the impact on those in attendance will be similar. Stephen and I sat down with Timo and Billy at Timo's home here in San Luis Obispo. Join us now for the conversation. Timo Beckwith, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chrissa and Stephen.
And with Billy Clayton.
Hi, how are you?
The purpose of today's interview is going to be to discuss a brand new project that, Timo, you have helped bring together, so I'm going to let you give us that overview.
Thank you, Chrissa. Well, the project is called Prime Particle Productions. It wasn't really seeded by me. I think it was seeded by Billy and Amber. Bill and Amber put on a show at the Grange Hall with Mama Crow, and Ted Emmerich also was involved in that, and there was a lot of video production and sculpture, and it was so great to see some of the video capture of musicians on the stage projected onto sculpture, and they've been thinking about this concept and expanding upon it for some time before I got involved, and then I got involved, and we started really honing it down to where we have created an event production company of a very unusual type. We stuck on the name Prime Particle Productions. And the fun thing about that is the word particle is spelled lowercase p, uppercase A-R-T, lowercase I-C-L-E. So art stands out. And that's really what this company is about. We're about bringing together a huge array of different forms of creativity into creating the events that actually engage people.
Billy, do you want to add something to that?
It seems like all of us combined kind of had the same vision of getting involved with other musicians, other artists. Amber and I were talking and came up with the idea that we wanted to do some sort of event. We mentioned it to Timo, and then we had the opportunity to display some my vision in projecting and sculpture and putting art up on the sculpture. And once we did that, it gave a visual representation of what I'd been talking about because it was awful hard to explain. And once everybody saw it, it just took off.
Can you give a little more description of what you mean by the video or the art on the sculpture?
The art we wanted to project at first onto a flat surface because that's how you think of projection. And then we went to a play at Cal Poly. They were moving screens into the projections because I could never figure out how you could try and follow a projection with a screen, especially if they were odd-shaped. And so when I saw that, then that kind of opened up a door. And then because I work for a video production company, the video part of it just kind of fell into place. And then I mentioned it to Ted Emmerich, and he says, "Oh, I already know what I want to make for this. I've always been wanting to do this." So he built these sculptures with a reflective surface, but also could be lit from inside, and we put the projections up on them, and we're overwhelmed and with what the possibilities of all of that could mean. So then we put together the show at the Grange, and Timo played at that also. And there were some images we had, I think, of Timo playing an instrument that he had made and zoomed into his hands and putting those up on the projections that really started to make everybody think of, we've got something here and, and we can do something pretty cool with it.
So we're going from 3D to flat, as it's usually projected, but now back to 3D.
Oh, yeah. We're doing a lot of video capture. You see them on stage, but then you see maybe their hands or their face really huge, but not just on a screen, on an actual sculpture that is black behind it. So the image actually stays on the sculpture. It's not like there's a sculpture in the way of the image. It's like the sculpture becomes the screen. And that just really, you know, sparked a big spark. And we had talked about doing some events out in nature, which we're still talking about, where those pods actually float on the water, and sending wireless feed to them and having projectors inside them or out on beams. And so we're capturing what's going on shore and taking it out into the water, projected onto these pods that are floating. That's really exciting too, and that's in the works down the road. But I think one of the most exciting things about the idea of what we're doing, and I think the real deep motivation for it, is to really stimulate creativity and imagination in a way that is way outside of the box. We're going to be putting on these events that harken back in some regards to the concept of the happenings of the 60s, but with a much more fine art bent to them, in that we're incorporating so many elements, as many as we can, and we'll probably have elements incorporated that we haven't even thought of yet as the process unfolds. But one of the processes is, of course, what we talked about, the video capture. It could also be projected onto a ceiling or onto a wall or onto the bodies of whoever's there. So that's one aspect, video capture, and then video production. So we're going out and doing production where we say we shoot into a pool, or we take pictures of water in a pool, and then we could tweak that so that it doesn't really look like water, but it has that energy, and maybe put a ball of fire in the middle of a circle of moving water, and then put a silhouette of a dancer just going off inside the ball of fire, and then project that onto a sculpture or project that onto the bodies of dancers. And I think open up the idea of what is creativity to people in the community. What could be done that is outside the box? And we may have musicians, live musicians, but they're not going to be on a stage. They're going to be in the room playing. There'll be music, dance, costume design, painting, digital art, video production, sculpture, poetry, spoken word. We're going to really mix these things up as much as possible. And we're very excited because our very first event will be at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art on August 24th from 6 to 9 p.m.
It might sound like a naive question, but there's a reason why I'm asking it. Would you define for this project what you consider the box? If we're going outside the box, I'm asking for a definition of the box.
Oh, okay. The box is usually a stage, a theater and a stage. And you have performers up on a stage performing, and an audience sitting in chairs or standing or somehow watching them. So that's one aspect that's way outside the box, is we're going beyond that and going beyond even in many cases having what people would consider a normal space to do something like this in. Because we may be doing it in nature, and it will be open to whoever shows up.
What we're looking to do is be able to scale this to any size, shape, form, and still be able to do an interactive performance with the audience that's there. And I think that really steps outside the box. I mean, having something that's so scalable that we could play a small coffee shop, or we could be in a total, complete outdoor setting at a festival or anything else and still be able to do all of this. So, and I think the other part that I'd say is outside the box is that we're taking artists that are accomplished and are used to working as individuals on their own projects. That is one of the things that make us artists. We have that kind of drive, and we're used to controlling whatever it is we're working with, and we're very temperamental about all of that. And to bring in a group of artists and try and find common ground and keep the personalities where nobody dominates and yet everybody contributes, that's pretty outside the box, but has been a lot of fun to watch it as it evolves. And then some really nice stuff starts happening because then we start feeding off of each other's energy. To have this kind of talent around you that you feed off, which inspires you to push yours forward and expand your limits of what you've been doing. And then you also get to see what everybody's doing, and it gives you more ideas and the way it all goes. So it's outside the box that way for sure.
And I use that phrase because for me, sometimes it feels as though people say it as a justification for what they think is throwing the box away. How do we make this work? All sorts of ways that you're just pushing and pushing and pushing. What can we do with this?
I think in order to think outside the box that you have to recognize the existence of the box. Otherwise, you don't know if you're outside it or inside it. So it's one of those things that I think it's really interesting to establish what the norm is for that particular type of expression and then stepping beyond that and going outside of it that way.
One of the aspects that I think of as being outside the box or the normal convention is that taking the concept of creative activities and then working with that creative activity and that creative energy and juice in new ways. That's what's really exciting to me. For example, I have a whole series of drawings that I've been working on for 20, 30 years. I call them the Shadow Series, and they merged into the Shadow Merger prints, merging digital art with this drawing form, and then they're merging into sculpture. And now we've taken that concept of these shapes, and we actually did some video at the beach that merged dance with drawing by taking these long bamboo poles that I made and doing a kind of improvisational dance as we drew these kinds of shapes in the sand, really large scale, on a clean beach after a high tide, and then videoed that from above. So there we're merging video, drawing, and dance all together in a new kind of production that then will be perhaps projected onto sculptures, or maybe it'll be projected onto the bodies of the dancers or the audience. We don't really know, because that part will be a little bit improvisational.
If you are wondering, what is this program and who am I listening to, ponder no longer. This is Ears on Art, found only here on KCBX Public Radio. Stephen DeLuque and I, Chrissy Hewitt, are talking with Timo Beckwith and Billy Clayton, two of the core team of Prime Particle Productions. We continue now as each describes his individual art background. I'll start with Billy.
Really started with music and started when I was 8 years old. Played saxophone in the school band, and once I had an instrument in my hand, I was hooked. Glad we're on radio so you can't really see how old I am, but it was a long time ago that it started. And then blossomed from there, majored in voice in college, and then was in the service and kind of dropped out for a while, then got back into it and played in bands and a lot of writing. Began writing lyrics as well as music. Art-wise, I had a family and I had to feed my family, so I worked as a house painter. Oddly enough, it gave me a lot of insight into how spray works, and I got some airbrushes in my hand and realized I could airbrush, which was very strange because I couldn't draw stick figures very well, but for some reason, as soon as I had an airbrush in my hand, I could do these unbelievable photographic-looking images. And then that evolved into digital arts. And I was also in the coffee business. And we thought at the beginning of the internet would be a good time to have a website and we could sell 1 million pounds of coffee. So we built one of the first coffee websites that ever was and put it up on the internet and said, wow, how does anybody know it's there? And that became the great search. And I was working with a group that was also just getting into 3D digital animation. One of the things we had looked at and saw that we thought the internet was moving into was chat, which it did. And then we thought it would evolve into 3D chat environments. And we actually got involved in it in 1996 and started building 3D chat environments. At the same time, I had started a coffee business, and it started with a cart, and then we decided to move it into and make a coffee house. And when we did, we had built a world, a 3D chat world environment with actually had sculptures and animation going on in the environment. And the mayor of Morro Bay came and cut the rope at our store when we opened and then sat down at a computer, and we were the first internet cafe on the Central Coast. So she sat down and hosted a chat environment with people from many different parts of the world. They were really ringers that we knew from, because really that was the only people that were surfing in that area at the time. And there were people from Germany and Switzerland and Australia and New Zealand and the United States. So we did the world's first ever virtual reality grand opening over the internet. Getting involved in that end of it, I found that I had a talent for being able to manipulate pixels, really, and create art. And then that has evolved into using photographs and then taking them into the digital realm and adding all kinds of things to them. And that's kind of my history.
Whoa.
That's an incredible journey.
Okay, Timo, can you top that one?
Well, I don't know. I have a different story altogether. I think I'm kind of an old guy too, but I've been doing art. Sometimes people say, when did you decide to be an artist? And my response is always the same. I didn't. It just was who I came into this world as an artist. I can remember, you know, the kindergarten teacher dragging my parents in to see some drawing I had done in crayons of a brush fire that happened, because as a little boy I thought brush fires were really exciting, with the firemen coming and the hoses dragging and the flames and all that. So nobody had to push me, I just did it, you know, and I did a lot of drawing, a lot of painting, a lot of sculpture. And then when I was about 8 years old, I started playing drums. Then I graduated into playing drums and recorder and then other stringed instruments and vocals later in life. And so I do a lot of music. And then in terms of the visual art, I feel like I'm always pulling on a thread that's attached to a ball of string, and I never know what's on the other end. So whatever the thread is, it's there. I pull on it, and something always gets revealed. And that's probably why I do so many different forms of art. I've always had an interest in masks and indigenous art. I think the Museum of Man in Balboa Park in San Diego had a huge influence on my life and my interest in anthropology and the art and music and dance and just culture in general of many different countries throughout the world. So in that regard, the mask making, I got into that. I was carving palm fronds when I was 12 years old and making masks that people were hanging on their walls. And then that is, as that evolved, then I really wanted to make masks that were wearable as tools of transformation, which is what they are, for real performances, rituals, Mardi Gras, parades, films. One of my masks was worn by Tyra Banks in a John Singleton film. And then I got into exploring the material aspect. How do I make these things really light? What do I use? How can I control the form and still make them function ergonomically so you can dance in them and they don't hurt? That was one of the threads that really I pulled on a long, long time to find all these different materials and ways to accomplish those things. And then those materials migrate into sculpture. Whatever it is, it always initiates something else. There's a kind of cross-pollination. In high school, I had two art classes, and then the teacher said, well, you know what? You can just come in here on my free period, which was once a day for the last 2 years, and do whatever you want and use the materials. And so that was cool. And then I was on a journey after leaving San Diego, and I was trying to sleep in a laundromat in Larkspur. Two guys came in. They go, who are you? What's up? And I go, oh, I'm just on a journey. And they go, we live here in Mill Valley or Larkspur, and we're going to this school over in the East Bay in Oakland. It's called California College of Arts and Crafts. And they told me about it, and I said, wow, that sounds really fantastic. They said, well, come on over, and we'll show you around. Hung out there at California College of Arts and Crafts for a couple of days. I was just like, wow, this is my kind of school. Right? Sculpture studios, metal studios, jewelry, ceramics, painting, everything. I came back to San Luis Obispo, lived here for a year, got a little bit of money, moved to Berkeley in 68, and went to summer school, majored in sculpture. Since I've been here, it's just been a constant exploration. And when I started doing recording and producing albums, and I really wanted to be able to produce cover art for those albums, I got into photography, and that has really morphed into a merger with a lot of other things I do. I've always had a huge interest in dance, and I've done a lot of work in the ecstatic dance realm. Had a long, long interest in film. So I decided I really wanted to do some filmmaking. I wanted to do a dance film. I did a dance film in Joshua Tree. Did that and just loved it because it melded nature, costume, music, dance, and film. All those arts in one. And then that translates into some of the work we're doing for Prime Particle Productions.
I think that journey is a wonderful word here because it's just obviously just an ongoing opening of passageways.
Mm-hmm. It's about giving. You know, I think as artists, we just want to give something of spirit to the world that will stimulate that upliftment in our planet. And we need it, you know, because creating art is really, to me, it's actually a spiritual practice because any artist knows that where does this stuff come from? You know, where does this stuff that I do ever come from? Well, we don't know. You know, nobody knows. You know, I don't care if you're a jazz artist or a dancer. When you drop into the pocket, you drop into that place where you're just doing it, and then you go, wow, look what just came out of me. That's what I mean by it being, in my opinion, a spiritual practice, and it can be pursued as such. And then this concept of process and just engagement is so very important. All you have to do is engage that process and walk that path, and things will happen because no matter how accomplished you are, you only got there by walking that path. Great art gets produced. It gets produced by engaging the process. And I've begun to think of all artworks as only artifacts of the process. So the actual artwork isn't nearly as important as the process.
I agree with you about how we're so product-oriented is the fact that I've often told people, it's like, after I finish a painting, I'm done with it. I don't really care what happens to it. It's like, to me, I learned what I needed to from the painting by going through the process of painting it. And the image itself pretty much doesn't have much worth to me at that point. And so I often paint over images over and over and over again. And I know a lot of artists find that just absolutely blasphemous, that you're supposed to preserve these things. And it's like, nah, not really. I've done it. It's fine.
And then in terms of affecting people, you know, I played for a long time with Chris O'Connell in a group called Human Human, which was really pretty exotic world fusion music. What I've found out just by being out in the world is that people will come up to me that I don't know at all and say, you know what, man, I was like in high school and you know, you played that music and it just stimulated something in me, and now I play the guitar and I didn't think I ever would. And you see that what you've done actually had an impact that you didn't know was there. You can't always measure the impact. It's not an applause. It's because you put yourself out in the world and open it up to people to encounter your process, that that's how you stimulate it in other people. And it does happen.
I'm so glad that you called me the other day, Timo, and alerted us to what you're working on, because as somebody who's in many different ways been trying to advocate for cross-discipline, interdisciplinary, whatever you want to call it, that we don't live in vacuums. And I give three cheers to the whole idea that you've got going here, which just seems that it doesn't have an end.
I think so, too. It's once I got involved with these guys, it was just, it's been an amazing, amazing experience and very stimulating. We come up with ideas that I think feed each other, and that's really what pushes everything forward. People that attend one of these happenings will actually find themselves part of the art that's happening. When Amber and I first talked about this, we said we wanted to create something that you walked in with one perspective, and when you left, you had a different perspective. Well, I know for me, it's altered my experience, so.
Well, I think that that's a really sound place to close this part of the conversation. Plan is next week to continue with a little more in-depth conversation with the animator.
Mm-hmm. James Satoru Strauss.
Join us for that, and thank you, Billy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and it's been a pleasure.
And Timo?
Thank you, Krista. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Billy.
And Stephen.
Thank you both. I can't wait to hear more.
This has been Ears on Art, and our conversation today has been with Timo Beckwith and Billy Clayton, two of the 7-member team that comprises a brand new multidisciplinary group entitled Prime Particle Productions. What they are doing can certainly be compared with the art happenings of the 60s, but in this case, they are bringing to it a whole lot more thanks to technology, as well as a real upbeat spirit of inclusiveness and creativity. Their first event will be at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art on August 24th from 6 to 9. That's a Saturday. It follows closely on the heels of the art opening for the juried sculpture exhibit Slam. Should be quite an evening. We'll continue this conversation next week. Timo Beckwith will be here, and so will internationally recognized computer animator James Satoru Strauss. Ears on Art is a program which co-host Stephen DeLuque and I produce here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. It is a twice-monthly part of the audio magazine Issues and Ideas. I want to thank our guests, Timo Beckwith and Billy Clayton. Till next week, thank you so much for listening.